Greetings, everyone. This is Michael Nagler with the first part of our nonviolence news on this episode. And on the heels of the brilliant analysis that we just heard from Stephen Zunas about the struggle in Western Sahara, and that Sahrawi struggle is a clear, in fact, I would say an inspiring example of creativity, of courage, of what they would call in Arabic sumud, endurance, persistence. But again, they have the disadvantage of not having much access to training, education, or strategy, which is why Meta works so hard on exactly those three things. And to follow that up, I would like to read to you part of a report that came out in the ICNC, International Center for Nonviolent Conflict, their very valuable service called Minds of the Movement. Yesterday, they had an article on Mauritania, which we just was hearing about. Mauritania outlawed slavery in 1981, if you can believe that. But they have refused to acknowledge, much less address, its persistence throughout Mauritanian society. And I don't want to go into the whole story here, but I do very much want to read you a quote from a man named Biram, who is a leader of the courageous nonviolent resistance or abolition struggle in against slavery in Mauritania. And here's what he said. Bear with me because the whole thing is very valuable. Quote, "For religious, moral, and other reasons, the founding members of IRA, that's the abolition movement, do not believe that violence carries any benefit or utility. Violence is counterproductive to humanitarian actions. It can spiral out of control. It espouses evil, oppression, and injustice, which only draw us back into violent terrains, which give the advantage to such forces. Responding to violent actors with violence only justifies the atrocities, destruction, and misery they cause." And Biram goes on, "Our nonviolent Pacific ideology and action are part of what will continue to allow humanity to survive and prosper in peace. Nonviolent action certainly resonates with the aspirations of oppressed people, but perhaps equally as important, with the buried and dormant aspirations of violent people who belong to oppressive groups." Would you let me repeat that last phrase? Nonviolent action resonates with the buried and dormant aspirations of violent people who belong to oppressive groups. And this is a cardinal principle in nonviolence, that you are never against persons. You are actually liberating your oppressor as much as you are liberating yourself. And this again helps what Stephen Zunas, the point that Stephen Zunas was trying to make. This is an Arab. This is a follower of Islam. And yet his nonviolence is about as deep and principled and inspiring as you can get. Stephanie, over to you.
Well, thank you very much. So the news covers resources, events, and then the news itself. So because nonviolence is about getting involved as much as it is about figuring out where our passion and our energy can meet the needs of the world and besides what's happening too. So in more, a little bit more onto what Stephen Zunas said, there is a resource if people want to know more about the situation in Western Sahara. You can check out Western Sahara, War, Nationalism, and Conflict E-Resolution, authored by this week's Nonviolence Radio guest, Stephen Zunas.
And for our first resource, I'd like to say that Indivisible has local offices, and there is one in Sebastopol. It's indivisibleseb.org and Santa Rosa and Healdsburg. But the International Center on Nonviolent Conflict, to mention them again, has entered into a partnership with Rutgers University International Institute for Peace, and that jointly they will host a free, moderated online course called People Power, the Study of Strategic Nonviolent Resistance. And it's starting soon, September 27th to November 10th. Successful course participants become eligible for the ICNC grant opportunities and a certificate of completion. So I would comment this is another example of university movement collaboration, which is a wonderful development. If it had started 20 years earlier, I still might still be at Berkeley.
Mm-hmm. Would you call that a form of constructive program, Michael?
Definitely a form of constructive program. Yes. Thank you, Stephanie. It definitely is.
Okay. So is white supremacy only a problem of the American South? The answer, of course, is no. Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine points out that there are many ways to uproot white supremacy within one's own community. She lists about 13, but surely there are more. And she says that rooting out white supremacy is not a task that belongs only to those communities with Confederate monuments. Every region of our country has its history of racial exclusion and white supremacy enforced to this day by domestic terrorism, laws, regulations, and police discrimination. Every region has seen people of color, especially African Americans, forced off land that they farmed, out of businesses, schools, voting booths, and often into poverty through menial underpaid work, overpriced slums, and police practices that disproportionately target people of color. And so she emphasizes really powerful constructive ways of lifting up the voices for justice in all of our communities. So don't miss her article on Yes Magazine.
One last resource then. Truth Out has an apparent, from myself, Truth Out has an apparently moving and very heartbreaking film, though I haven't seen all of it yet, called The Last Guardians. It's about the indigenous struggles against that powerful, diabolical combination of oil companies and governments, the governments of those very indigenous people. And this is the same the whole world over, and of course, against this powerful combination is the power of nonviolence. So you can watch the trailer and read the article through Truth Out. And yes, this is an example of constructive program.
Awesome. So are you, let's see, there's a movie out that seems like a good one for people to see. It's called Dolores. And Dolores Huerta is among the most important yet least known activists in American history. She's an equal partner in co-founding the first farm workers union with Cesar Chavez. And her enormous contribution have largely gone unrecognized. Dolores tirelessly led the fight for racial and labor justice alongside Chavez, becoming one of the most defiant feminists of the 20th century. And she continues to fight to this day at 87. With intimate and unprecedented access to this intensely private mother to 11, the film reveals the raw personal stakes involved in committing one's life to social change. It's directed by Peter Bratt. The film opened in U.S. theaters September 1st, and you can find that at local theaters or potentially online pretty soon. Also, Truth Out, Interviews for Resistance, is a nice new resource out there if you go to Truth Out. And it says that since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. And it's an ongoing series called Interviews for Resistance, where experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers share their insights on what works, what doesn't, and what hasn't changed, and what has changed. And what is still the same. And finally, we have another resource, and this is going to lead into some of the nonviolence news because of the hurricanes, Harvey and Irma. There's an sf72.org is an emergency preparedness site that's refreshingly calming and really well put together. And it can help people prepare for disaster. And what I really like about this resource is that it promotes connection and community. And so it suggests to people when you're preparing for your emergency kit that you bring your board games along and you're thinking about how to connect with your neighbors, how are you going to get in contact with your team of people, your family, and so forth. But there's another element to disaster response as well, and that's our inner preparation. The Meta Center has a resource on our website called The Inner Dimension of Emergency Preparedness. So we have to work to prepare ourselves ahead for tough situations so we can be at our best. And this means, you know, finding a mindfulness practice or something that we can do in order to calm ourselves at times of emergency. And all of this can relate to nonviolence as well, because Gandhi's idea of the Shanti Sena was not just about interrupting conflict as it's happening, but it's also about Shanti Sena volunteers, Peace Army volunteers, going into communities and helping in disasters or helping when people get harmed by natural issues or even just helping to clean up communities. So you can do your nonviolence by preparing inwardly for emergencies and also getting out there and getting involved, which is all part of constructive program and person power. Michael.
Since we've mentioned several good films on the nonviolence side here, Stephanie, I'd like to point out on a more somber note that a recent survey was done and found that no less than 1,100 TV shows had received Pentagon backing, 900 of them since 2005. And the report says, the U.S. government and Hollywood have always been close, but we can now show that the relationship between U.S. national security, I'm putting security in quotes, and Hollywood is much deeper and more political than anyone has ever acknowledged. And I think it would be hard to overemphasize the importance of this direct propaganda pipeline in shaping people's consciousness toward militarism in this case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now into some more news. French artist J.R. created a giant image of a toddler that peers over the U.S.-Mexico border wall. According to Al Jazeera, the cutout of the boy stands nearly 20 meters tall and is meant to prompt discussion about immigration. It stands at the Tecate border crossing about 64 kilometers southeast of San Diego.
I want to bring up something that might seem controversial and that does come from the New York Times. It was an article called A Frightening Myth About Sex Offenders by David Feige. So it turns out that sex offenders have been labeled as having a frightening and high rate of recidivism, meaning returning to a life of crime after being released from prison. And investigators found that this frightening and high rate is based on one popular article that was quoted out of context. The myth is that 80% of sex offenders reoffend. That's a little bit higher than the national average of about 70 to 72%. But in reality, get this, the rate of reoffending is closer to 3%. So I was speculating about that this fact, and mind you, sex offense is a terrible thing and shouldn't happen, but this appalling fact fits perfectly into a pattern of scapegoat logic. In other words, a society that is suffering from tension looks around for people to scapegoat, and they need some people who are basically not people. They're dehumanized. And the term we often hear about sex offenders is that they are monsters. Therefore, the only thing you can do is to punish them and drive them out of society, Oedipus being the classic example. But it's amazing how fast and how completely this knee-jerk mythological horror has been inscribed in our legal system. If this was complete news to me. I believed everything they were saying until I saw this particular documentary and read this article by David Feige.
So ham radio, in other news, ham radio is a known hobby to many people, and it's a hobby that's meant to serve the community in times of crisis in particular. And in Houston, post-Hurricane Irma, ham radio operators came to the rescue of the community when all other technology failed them. And one ham radio operator, Luke Caliano, tuned into Texas from Lancaster, New York, and he sends radiograms to areas across the country in order to help support those who are facing disaster, and in particular, in this case, into Houston. And Caliano said, it feels really good because I'm giving back to the community, and this is what our hobby's all about. So way to go, ham radio operators.
We have a good system of ham radio set up at our ashram, incidentally, all ready to go. Well, we've been mentioning from time to time the campaign that's put on by Campaign Nonviolence, a project of Pache Bene, which attempts to have a week of actions in September 16th, and this one starts tomorrow. If you're listening live on September 16th, it is the fourth Campaign Nonviolence Week of Actions. And I'm happy to report that they have been aiming for 1,000 events to be registered with them all around the country. And guess what? As of yesterday, they have 1,225 actions. These are actions for peace and nonviolence to end war, poverty, racism, and environmental destruction. Congratulations, CNV.
Mm-hmm. Turning now to more nonviolence post-Hurricanes Irma and Harvey, Abir and Nora al-Sheikh Bakri are sisters from Douma, Syria. This is an article from the Huffington Post. So basically what they did is when they heard when they saw what was happening, they decided to try to help feed people in the situation. So they fled their homeland in 2012 after their country's civil war engulfed the city, and spent 4 years in Egypt before being resettled in Clarkson, Georgia in 2016 with other members of their family. And they said, suffice to say that they know what it's like to watch homes crumble before their eyes. So when Hurricane Irma bore its weight down on the southeastern U.S., displacing more than 500,000 people by Sunday, they sprung into action. And this is a quote, "I called my sister Noura and we got cooking," Abir, 28, told the Huffington Post. They drove about an hour to the Hamza Islamic Center in Alpharetta, Georgia, on Sunday evening, where they said about 39 evacuees were riding out the storm. And so they served them Middle Eastern dishes like tabbouleh and kebab. And Abir says, "We were uprooted from war, so we know the feeling of leaving everything behind." And Noura, 30, said, "I was so afraid when we heard about the hurricane, especially as Syrians were already traumatized."
Isn't that a beautiful thing, way to turn the negative into the positive?
And to connect that feeling of what it's like to lose one's home into the bigger issue about immigration and refugee status.
So correct. Just as many of the people who are fighting for gun control are people who have suffered from gun violence in their life. That's the way to use it. I wanted to mention that Representative Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii, Democratic representative, has just introduced the Off Fossil Fuels for a Better Future Act, called the OFF Act. It was introduced last week. We presently have a moratorium on new fossil fuel projects, but this would move the country to 100% renewable energy by 2035, with, and this is important, with a focus on a rapid transition in the next 10 years. And the bill has been co-sponsored by a lot of representatives, and interesting and more encouraging than even than that, as of yesterday, more than 300 groups have signed in support, including the Meta Center for Nonviolence. And we will, in the print version of this news, we will have a link where you can sign up your organization.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael. In other news, The Nation released a statement of solidarity with Michael Bennett, that was an American football player, that was released and signed by people like Angela Davis and Arundhati Roy and Naomi Klein and the editors at The Nation, and among others. And they say, "We, the undersigned, stand with Michael Bennett, a professional football player with the Seattle Seahawks, philanthropist and activist following an incident of police brutality in Las Vegas. On the morning of August 27th, the reported shooting on the Vegas Strip led to chaos. Michael Bennett ran for cover, as did hundreds of others. Instead of being assisted, video and photographic evidence shows that Las Vegas police targeted Bennett, put him on the ground in handcuffs, while the primary officer took out a weapon, placed it near the back of his head. According to Bennett, the officer said that if he moved, he would be shot. And Bennett was then put in a police car and, after a period of time, let go without charges. And they said, "We condemn this act of racial profiling and excessive force perpetrated by the Vegas police against Mr. Bennett." So these kinds of statements help to show that there is solidarity and support for when injustice takes place, and that can be an important tool in our nonviolence toolbox.
A very uplifting note. I know that many of us have been concerned about the black-footed ferret, right? We've been worried about these creatures.
Because we thought they were extinct.
We have thought that they were extinct since 1979, and that's really a shame, because these are like the cutest rodents you ever saw in your life, with little black noses and little black feet. They're so sweet. And in 1979, we had some in captivity, and the last one died. The species was declared extinct, and that was, again, a pity, because it was the only ferret native to North America.
Wow.
And there are several things that wipe them out. But guess what? They're back. They've been discovered in Wisconsin, and there's something like 500 of them ferreting around out there, and they're impossibly cute. It's delightful. It's delightful to know that nature is resilient.
Nonviolence in the news is delightful, to go from from one situation to another, because nonviolence encompasses all aspects of our environment and life and people. So this is really good news. Thank you, Michael. Yeah.
I hadn't drawn that conclusion, Stephanie, but it's very, very sound. I wanted to move on to some events. The Mill Valley Seniors for Peace is sponsoring a talk by myself called Nonviolence Now, what's going well, and how can we help. That'll be Monday, September 25th, 3 to 4:30 p.m. at the Redwoods in Mill Valley. If you want to know more or RSVP, write to Angela Dawn Parker, written as one word, angeladawnparker@gmail.com. You had some more news, I think, Stephanie.
Well, since we've moved on to events, I do want to say that if anybody's looking for more nonviolence news and community, they can join the Meta Center for Nonviolence every Wednesday morning, pretty early, 8:15 to 9:15 a.m. Pacific time, for an in-depth online discussion about nonviolence in the news and looking at various sources, including Waging Nonviolence, which I do have one item from Waging Nonviolence I'd like to share. You can contact the Meta Center for Nonviolence to get involved in that. And then on Monday, September 18th, this is the week of the International Day of Peace next week, on Monday at Aquas Cafe at 6:30 p.m., which is in Petaluma, the Meta Center will be hosting Restorative Resources, an organization from Santa Rosa, and some students to have a community conversation with the Petaluma community about restorative justice in our schools. And we hope that you can join us there. And this is sort of a resource, because Waging Nonviolence is a great resource. And an event happened, actually. So it's event, resource, and news all together. And there was resistance of a violent arms fair, and it's been resisted very, very creatively. There's an article on Waging Nonviolence by Andrew Mitta, even. And this is what he says. In London, thousands of protesters have been taking direct action to shut down one of the world's biggest arms fairs, the Defense and Security Equipment International. And it opened on September 12th, but the exhibition center where it was held was repeatedly blockaded during the week before it began as activists were preparing to disrupt it. It appears that, he says, on the sheer scale of resistance over the last week overwhelmed the police and organizers of the event, as did the creativity and determination of many groups who were involved. Each day was organized by different groups that made up the Stop the Arms Fair Coalition, and to allow them to plan their own actions alongside like-minded people with similar concerns. And this approach allowed groups and campaigns that have not typically worked together to find common cause in resisting the fair. So this is what we've also been talking about in the idea of the roadmap strategy of let's bring various people, various organizations, various interests together to resist one item at a time, and it can strengthen all of our movements.
And that's an increasing trend. Well, I can't match your triple whammy of events, resource, and news, but I wanted to mention two events very quickly. It's, again, local and timely, on September 21st and 22nd in Sacramento, an event called California 2020 is being put on by the Shift Network. And I think that they have some wonderful speakers. And they will be talking about successful long-term strategies, which is the subject of the forthcoming issue of our nonviolence magazine. And these strategies always build up from the small to the large, and that is what they're planning to do. Then on Wednesday in New York, this is from Maria Stefan of the United States Institute of Peace, there'll be a forum on how nonviolent grassroots movements can advance more just, peaceful, and inclusive societies. This is building up from a couple of General Assembly and Security Council resolutions. And again, I think there'll be some very brilliant and creative people there if you're in the New York area.
Great. Thank you so much, Michael Nagler. This is Nonviolence Radio. This has been your Nonviolence in the News. We hope you come back in 2 weeks. And until the next time, everybody, take care of one another. Ciao.